Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with your host, executive editor of Newsbusters, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the home of critical media bias theory, the Newsbusters podcast. On Saturday, Republican Glenn Youngkin was inaugurated as the new governor of Virginia. Too bad, so sad for the Washington Post. I picked up my Sunday paper out of the driveway. And, of course, they put it at the bottom of page one. You think they put the Democrats being inaugurated at the bottom of page one? Maybe, if there was a hot breaking news story. But in this case, they put it underneath a big investigative report on how many state legislators own slaves. So we're taking a story on Glenn Youngkin. We're putting it underneath a big expose on the old slavers, people who are long dead. Now, does anybody think that this kind of placement was accidental? I think not. You know, up at the top of the page next to the slave article was one of these stories about poor Joe Biden. It wasn't a great week for him. Yeah, well, I like that being on the front page. But, you know, the way that they say it is also, aw, the Democrats are upset that the Democrats aren't doing well. Now, well, let's guess Youngkin was put next to the slaveholders because among his first actions was an executive order banning critical race theory in Virginia's public schools. Now, anybody on conservative Twitter knows this is funny because, well, what do the liberals do? Like Jonathan Capehart at the Post, they run around and say, critical race theory isn't taught anywhere. Maybe in some blue state law schools. You know, I mean, the idea that they would be upset at someone saying critical race theory shall not be taught and then claim it's not taught. Well, then you have nothing to be afraid of, do you? Well, I mean, this was all a setup for them to be upset on Martin Luther King Day. For example, let's take the crowded liberal fainting couch on The View. Nick Night Train Fondacaro took it on today. Sonny Hostin claimed that thanks to many red states, the children won't learn about Dr. King's work anymore. Gosh, I hate this. This is about as accurate as saying that mandating that children wear masks in schools will result in the end of breathing in classrooms. You can teach all about Martin Luther King. We learned all about Martin Luther King. But what we should call critical race theory is systemic racism education. Racism was systemic when Martin Luther King was around. He helped fix it. But the liberals want to pretend nothing ever changes ever, which apparently at this point means Barack Obama was a terrible president on civil rights, apparently, because nothing happened. But take a listen to Sonny Hostin.
I know that his legacy, MLK Jr.'s legacy, is under direct attack right now, his legacy of voting rights. And that saddens me, and I'm frustrated by that. And I know because in 9 states, have passed so-called critical race theory legislation, 20 states in our country are passing that kind of legislation, that there are children all over the country that won't learn about Dr. King's work, his life's work, the work that he gave up his life for.
Now, there are many things that Sonny Hostin wouldn't want to teach the kiddos about Martin Luther King. I mean, we're all human. They're all willing to talk about all the flaws of our presidents, especially our Republican presidents, certainly all of our white male presidents. But do you think that these days, I mean, these are things that have happened since I was in school. Would you like to teach the kids about how Dr. King plagiarized major portions of his PhD dissertation at Boston University? Do you think that is something that they teach? That the doctorate was kind of a little fraudulent? or how Reverend King cheated on his wife, Coretta, including on the night before he was tragically killed. Martin Luther King's close aide, Ralph Abernathy, wrote about this in a memoir in 1989, and Bryant Gumbel was so upset, he yelled at him. You could call it an author interview, but it was really an author disciplining. Yelled at him that he should print the legend and somehow not the ugly truth. This was one of those things where you say, yes, they're saying something important to you right now, and the liberal media insists that you need to print the legend and not the truth. That's what we're getting. It's not truth, it's propaganda. Well, they're exploiting this Martin Luther King holiday. This is, you would think this is supposed to be a unifying holiday. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, I guess maybe we should do more of this, that the conservatives use Memorial Day to talk about how the left hates the military. You could use Veterans Day to say the left hates veterans. You know, imagine us under Barack Obama when we had all these unnecessary deaths in Veterans Administration hospitals if we'd taken Veterans Day as an occasion to say, Barack Obama wants veterans dead. That would be a little out of line. But this is basically what these people do to exploit Martin Luther King Day. They exploit it to say Republicans are terrible racists. We're getting all the usual notes about Republicans wanting to suppress the black vote using so-called outrages like, may I see your driver's license? Asking for a voter ID, which is supported by a large majority of all American minorities, this is somehow a civil rights outrage. Kyle Drennan noted, CBS Mornings gave a softball interview on the morning of MLK Day to Biden's Justice Department official, Kristen Clark. She is a nut. She's a defund the police nut inside the Justice Department. She's not so fond about white people. But of course, CBS asks her softballs like, would you say that it's people of color who are being targeted by these laws? I mean, that's not even a question. That's go. Please elaborate on your thesis about systemic racism. Of course, she said, voting discrimination is alive and well. As usual, these guys don't find it insulting to think that asking for an ID is something blacks can't handle. They can't handle being asked for an ID. They can't manage to actually acquire an ID. They can't be, you can't actually expect them to put it in their wallet and bring it to the polls. Just all the lies that these people tell about voting rights. You know, we're getting all of this again. All this nonsense about how Republicans don't want you to, it's illegal to hand out food and water at the polls. No, what the Georgia law said was, we don't want liberal activists handing out food and water with a pamphlet. It feels like a bribe. That's what they're trying to stop. Not, oh, you. If your uncle gives you a bottle of water at the polls, he should be arrested. So CBS on Monday morning, if that wasn't bad enough, CBS on Sunday morning used the MLK Day as an occasion for a commentary by Douglas Brinkley. Despite the fact that just 10 days before, on January 6, he was comparing footage of the riot to footage that came out from the Nazi concentration camps after the Holocaust. Somebody who's that just intellectually disabled shouldn't be getting a commentary on CBS News. I mean, Doug Brinkley is best known, at least to some of us, for a 2004 lickspittle John Kerry biography that tried to make him look like G.I. Joe with Kung Fu grip goes to Vietnam. Doug Brinkley was such a slob, he needed like 73 corrections in this book, but now he's lecturing us about history. Remember Selma, says Douglas Brinkley, because guess what? What the Republicans and conservatives are doing now is somehow the new Jim Crow.
Republican-controlled state legislatures are writing laws that impede voter registration, reduce early voting hours, cut the number of polling places in urban areas, limit mail-in and drop-box voting, and politicize how elections are run. Meanwhile, GOP gerrymandering of legislative districts is trying to lock in Republican control at the state level, no matter how many people vote for the other person. Sound familiar? It should. It's the new Jim Crow.
This is just so wrong. It's not only mean-spirited, but it's wrong. And I think that blaming Congress or state legislatures, they're sort of avoiding the judiciary. The Supreme Court has ruled on some of these things. They call it, gutting the Voting Rights Act. To some extent, what they're doing is the courts have recently acknowledged that you can't say everything is racism, that everything is discrimination. So, for example, one law they recently ruled on required voters to cast their ballot in their assigned precinct or else their vote would not count. See, this was supposedly racist. If you vote in the wrong precinct and it's not counted, then you're a racist. A second law prohibited third parties, such as so-called voting rights activists, from collecting mail-in ballots from voters who are unable or unwilling to submit those ballots themselves. Now, these laws will usually allow your family members to collect your ballot, but not just random interest groups. But that, again, ballot harvesting, if you don't like that, if you don't like the idea that these ballots get out of the custody of voters and end up in the back of a van somewhere, well, you can't have any suspicions about that because that's racist. You pair that with January 6th, and now you've got these people comparing this to terrorism. Jason Johnson, Dr. Jason Johnson, who hilariously on his website suggests he's objective, went on the Nicole Wallace show, Deadhead White House, and talked about how he's not calling the Republican Party a party anymore because it's a dime store front for terrorists. This is one of many reasons why the rioters on January 6th were idiots, because it allows people to go on MSNBC and somehow try to compare the Republican Party to the PLO and the PLO supporting Hamas terrorists. I hate to break it to people who watch MSNBC. Hamas has been treated more respectably by the American press than the Republican Party is. The Russians, on the verge of invading the Ukraine, are reported on more objectively than the Republicans are. And I think what this underlines for anybody who isn't aware at this point is that inside the liberal media complex today and inside the Democratic Party is this whole notion that the number one enemy of the United States is the Republican Party and the conservatives. It's not Russia. It's not China. It's not Muslim terrorists. It's the GOP, the dime store front for terrorists. What a goon, Dr. Jason Johnson. That guy shouldn't be on any of these shows. The idea that these people lecture us about how Fox News is all about misinformation, like that idiot Oliver Darcy who runs around saying Fox News is a right-wing talking points channel. You know what's a stupid talking point? That MSNBC and CNN are somehow news channels when they put on Jason Johnson saying Republicans are terrorists. Speaking of terrorists, please read our Scott Whitlock. He took a look at the whole weekend coverage on the networks on the terrible hostage taking at a synagogue in a Dallas suburb called Colleyville. Now, the networks did cover this over the weekend. Perhaps they thought, oh, this could be good. This could be, this is Texas. This could be a mega terrorist who hates Jews. Nope, whoop. Well, they were really reluctant to underline this was a Muslim hostage taker, a British man named Malik Faisal Akram. I couldn't find that name on Twitter when I was looking around on the weekend. I went into our Snapstream system and was I just put in the word Muslim as a search term. Now, it's not perfect because it's closed captioning, and sometimes the closed captioning is really accurate, and sometimes it's really not accurate. So I'm not saying I know for a fact, but obviously you could tell from the search term, they weren't really using the word Muslim a lot. They used Islamic a couple times. Scott notes at one time that an FBI agent mentioned an Islamic type extremist. You have to put the word type in there somehow to be sensitive. Yeah, they really want to avoid phrases like Islamic extremist. So they did cover details around the hostage taker's demand that someone that we call Lady Al-Qaeda, Afia Siddiqui, should be released from prison. She's in there for attempting to murder U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan. We are expecting that this thing's going to vanish. Matt Vespa did this at Town Hall. Our old friend Matt Vespa, well, he's not old, I'm old, but we're going to smell here that this is the next Waukesha story. Obviously, luckily, nobody at this synagogue in Texas was harmed, scared, but not killed, unlike five people in Waukesha. But we expect this is probably going to be one of those incidents that gets some coverage over the weekend, and now, well, we're just going to walk away from this. I mean, this puts a crimp in their entire narrative. What have they been tried to say in the Biden years? What is the Merrick Garland so-called Objective Justice Department is trying to set up this whole notion, this narrative, that the dominant threat of terror is from the white racist right-wingers? Well, I say go get right racist terrorists if that's what you've got. You know, we're against terrorists of all colors and creeds. But they just hate this notion of you. Oh, no. Now we've got a Muslim hostage taker. You know, it reminds me of the first year of Obama. We had the Fort Hood shooting. Evan Thomas, then with Newsweek, went on the talk show Inside Washington and said, "I cringe that he's a Muslim. I mean, because it inflames all the fears. I think he's probably just a nutcase, but with that label attached to him, it will get the right wing going." NPR's Nina Totenberg agreed it was tragic, quote unquote, that it was a Muslim who did the killing. Now, some at the time said that fear of being accused of Islamophobia kept Nidal Hassan in the army, an army major and a psychologist who killed 13, wounded more than that. It was tragic. It was, you can't let the right wing have a talking point. I cringe that he is a Muslim. Why don't we cringe regardless of who the shooter is? Wouldn't that be refreshing? Finally, let's just point and laugh for a minute about the reliably liberal, reliable sources. Brian Stelter brought on former Clinton press secretary Joe Lockhart. He was called on to evaluate how the press is doing under Biden. Well, Lockhart, wearing his Tom Brokaw glasses and having that Tom Brokaw scowl on his face, said, "The press has failed. They're treating Biden unfairly. They're too snarky. And they're not airing Jen Psaki's briefings packed with truth live on television." And what's hilarious is at the end, Brian just says, "Oh, interesting."
Joe, can we go to Biden for a moment? Because I'd like to hear a Democrat's point of view about Biden at the one-year mark. How is the press treating Biden as he heads into that one-year mark?
Listen, I think the press is failing. They're treating him unfairly. First off, there ought to have been a dividend for returning truth and decency to the White House. And we didn't get that. We didn't get it at all. We've kind of returned to the snarky attitude that we saw with Trump, and in some respects, to Obama. And I'll give you an example about some of the decisions that get made. As I said, from the very first briefing, the Trump spokespeople lied. They lied every day, every briefing. And the majority of those briefings were aired live on television. Jen Psaki's in there now telling the truth. She's telling us what's going on in the government, what people need to hear. And they're rarely on live television. So that tells me that this is more about entertainment than it is about news. It's more about getting viewers than letting people know what's going on in the country. And that's a failure as far as I'm concerned.
Interesting.
Stelter didn't get defensive about CNN ignoring the Psaki briefing. I mean, it might just be their way of avoiding Peter Doocy appearing live on CNN. But it has been difficult after a while now that the Jen Psaki briefing is, we're trying to find it on, you know, streaming, network streaming services, on Washington Post Live on YouTube. We're struggling to find it. So obviously, yes, they are not being aired a lot live. I mean, even Fox News isn't always carrying them live. And I think that that's interesting in that I think it shows you how badly it's going for Biden, that they suggest that, you know, not all the questions to Jen Psaki are going to be positive. In fact, they're going to be overwhelmingly skeptical at this time. Yes, the media is going to be snarkier, or however Joe Lockhart wants to put it, when the president isn't doing well. That I think the media hesitates to blow sunshine when it's not sunshiny. I mean, they're not all a pack of Peter Doocy's, but they do ask questions that might put Jen Psaki on the defensive. Well, if you believe Jen Psaki can handle it, then yes, you should go ahead and put it on. But I think that there's this fear. Fact of the matter is, as we all know, that the mainstream, so-called mainstream reporters, can be tougher in the White House briefing than they actually are in the evening or the morning newscast. So they just think, let's just, you know, we won't run this live. We'll just run the snippets later that we like. But the reality is, you know, this is a very mediated presidency. It is a very careful presidency. Now, Biden is scheduled to have his second press conference. We're going to year two, and we're getting to the second formal press conference. Now, on Stelter Show, the other guest was Alyssa Farah Griffin, who used to work for Trump and now can't stand Trump. She at least called out the silliness from Joe Lockhart, that somehow Biden is the guy who is the decency president. I mean, Lockhart thinks that, oh, Biden's all truth and decency. Jen Psaki's all truth. And the first thing that I would have said if I was in Griffin's spot was just to say, who are you to lecture about truth, Mr. Bill Clinton didn't have sex with the intern? I mean, Lockhart was there in the White House press shop as the Clintons lied for about 8 months about him having sex with the intern. These are the last people that get to lecture us about having truth in the White House press briefings. Remember, Mike McCurry's dominant mode during that entire time in 1998 was to play Sergeant Schultz. Intern adultery? I know nothing. Joe Lockhart. I mean, obviously, at least Stelter's saying, and now for a Democrat point of view, Joe Lockhart, but he could say, good morning and welcome to Reliable Sources. For a Democrat point of view, I'm Brian Stelter. Well, at least Stelter asked Griffin about press conferences, but he sort of said, well, what do you think about him announcing the press conference this far in advance? She said, I don't think that's PR 101 because you don't want to announce it this far in advance. Well, you're missing the point. The point is he's having formal press conference number two. That ought to be laughed at. I mean, you just have to laugh at all the liberals who said, oh, when Biden comes in, democracy will stop dying in darkness. We'll have a president who's pro-First Amendment. He'll be so pro-press. Then they knew from experience that wasn't the case. Biden is still hiding, just as the press allowed him to hide in his basement in 2020. He does less interviews than any other president and less press conferences than any other president because he stinks. He can't handle it. And all the Biden voters in the media know it, and they're totally okay with it. You had this weird moment where they're like, Kelly O'Donnell saying, we'd like more press conferences, and Biden says, I would too. I don't think so. I think that's him trying to sound nicey-nice. You know, Biden, they know, he's not only prone to say ridiculous gaffe things, but he's surprisingly hostile when reporters challenge him. Like many Democrats, Biden expects the softballs. He feels entitled to the softballs, and when he doesn't get them, he gets angry. He doesn't quite turn green and turn into the Hulk, but he does get cranky. You know, I'm sure that the Biden people love the idea of, well, now with the Omicron variant, we're going to shrink the number of reporters allowed into the briefing. Oh, isn't that convenient? Reasons for the Bidens to like the Omicron variant. We shall see if the president actually takes any hardball questions in this. I imagine there's going to be some questions he won't like. But, you know, I think that the sad thing here is that the news media is well aware that their fellow journalists are going to get mad at them and their fellow liberals are going to get mad at them if they cause Biden to stumble or if they cause Biden to get angry and yell at people. I would hope that someone's going to ask him if he somehow thought it was productive to compare everyone who opposed him on voting rights to Bull Connor and George Wallace and Jefferson Davis. You know, so good for Alyssa Farah Griffin for saying that's not how you do it. Where is the idea that the news media is in the civil center? See, that's one of the myths here. Is they wanted to pretend in the Trump years, oh, you know what we really need is a return to decency. Stelter was big on this. Jake Tapper's been big on this. We need a return to decency. Well, then where's Jake Tapper screaming about all the stuff that Biden's been saying? I mean, none of us is going to expect that CNN's reporters are going to call Biden on this. Hello, Caitlin Collins. Let's have that question. We look forward to that. We will be all over that. That's why you come to Newsbusters. Once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for checking in.